This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Brickler. And joining me today, again, is my brother, founder and CEO of Catatalk. And today we have a special guest who played a crucial role in Catatalk's acquisition of Elmo Solutions, Steve Nunn, CEO of Intista. Steve specializes really in helping, it's kind of a misnomer, small company acquisitions. Of course, Steve, I think it's up to like $1 billion. So I think it's all about perspective, but Steve helps companies like ours and others who have acquisitions up to $1 billion to integrate. And so today we're going to talk a bit kind of behind the scenes with Steve of what that was like, talk to Scott about what that was like, you know, how Steve got into this, and really focus on really what it's like to experience an acquisition, both from Scott's perspective as someone acquiring a business and from Steve's perspective as a consultant who helps companies do that. So Steve, welcome. Great to have you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again, Steve. So Steve, like anything else, tell us a little bit about like, how do you get into acquisitions? I'm sure like most people, when you're a kid, you don't think when I grow up, I'm going to do acquisitions for small businesses up to $1 billion. Where's that sign up? So tell us a little bit, like, how did you come into this this kind of business, this role? And, you've been doing it for 25 plus years, so you obviously liked it. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I do like it. I do like it. Yes, I have done lots of different careers, but certainly early, the first part of my working life, I did 20 different jobs, no, sorry, 10 different jobs in 20 years. And I changed careers a number of times. I mean, jokingly, I say I had career ADD. I mean, I started life as a civil engineer, I'm British. I went into HVAC design in Australia, back to the UK into software design, then got into coding, software design, training, IT consulting in America. And I was at this large engineering software company called Bentley Systems doing project management and change management. And then I kind of wanted to make things a bit easier for my colleagues. So I volunteered. Now, be careful what you volunteer for. I volunteered to help out with the acquisition integrations. And I loved it. I found my home. So that's what I do. And I did 5 years at Bentley Systems. And then I've been independent ever since then, really.
Yeah, it sounds like I totally understand career ADD because I had a different career as well. I was a school teacher for 11 years before I came to Catatalk, and of course before that various jobs. But you're right about volunteering. You say, "Hey, I'll do that." Famous last words, right? I talked to lots of people in this podcast, but just in general, through talking to customers, you always wonder, like, how'd you get to doing that? And the story always begins, "Well, I kind of fell into it." You're like, "Yeah, it's amazing how many people just kind of fall into things."
Really is. It really is. Until you find your home, until you find where you're happy.
Yeah, until you find, where you're either good at something or you go, this is pretty interesting. I could do this. So, and you specialize specifically in small business, simple integrations. Can you differentiate between small business acquisitions and something else? I mean, is there medium business acquisitions? Are there large? I mean, how does that work?
Okay, so let's just imagine there's only small and large, because there are different segments. So if you were to buy, say, an airline company or a car company, and you integrate them together and you finish off, success is usually a financial thing. Like, hey, have we saved money? Have we reduced costs? Have we increased share value? All this kind of financial things. But if you buy a small company, say, software company like yourself or a small manufacturer, when you finish integration, success usually is like, hey, can we now grow? Can we now put a foot on the gas and off we go? So success is completely different for different sizes of companies. And so you wouldn't, if you could afford them, you wouldn't hire Deloitte to do a Catatalk integration, because that's not their central thing of doing. They deliver financial success. And you guys are ready to take on the world. Now you've got Elmo. So that's what is. But the value of a company to grow needs the people. The people's business relationships, their product skill, their business, their market knowledge, you know, their expertise at making little widgets, whatever it might be. And so the emphasis is upon the people and getting the people engaged and on board and getting them to stay and hang around and make a success out of the company. It's a big difference.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like the large acquisitions, that's less important. It's more about, you know, the dollars and cents, if you will.
Unfortunately so. Yeah. And they're the ones you hear on the news. They are the ones you hear on the news. And they're the ones that people worry about. They say, oh my goodness, you've been acquired. It's going to be terrible. Oh, you're going to lay people off. That's not the case with smaller integrations, not
right.
toys.
But for the larger ones, that is, because it's consolidation.
Yeah.
Just what it is. Okay. Okay. So Steve, that helped frames where your niche is. This is the kind of last question about how you got into it. Did you just see a need in the market? Like what? Since you were doing acquisition, what led you to this level? Because I'm sure there's money to be made in large company acquisitions.
Yes, there is more money in working for Deloitte than working for Intista. But I am super happy where I am. And isn't that really the object in life, to be happy? I couldn't imagine, you know, like a job where I'm like, do I lay people off or do I not? Do I save money? Spreadsheets? No. With Intista, it's a people. I love the agility of small companies. I love I love the fact that I can actually have more than one client at a time. If I was doing an airline company, believe me, I'd be working 40 hours a week or more on that. But for you guys, I didn't, and we'll get into that later, that I can empower you guys and help you guys along. And I love that kind of coaching and helping thing. I mean, really, it's why I volunteered. I was trying to help my colleagues out at Bentley. And so it really matches who I am.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, we're glad to have worked with you, right? I think learned a lot. So Scott, this is like maybe hard to do, maybe not. Like you start thinking about before you knew even Steve existed, right? You say, okay, well, we're considering buying a company. And you say, well, we're going to buy a company. And there's all kinds of parts and pieces to that. It's not just the financial side, right? Which is like, how are you going to buy it and all of that. Mm-hmm. There's also this part about what did you think brought you to Steve? Why did you even think about that? Because if it were me, I probably would have thought about like, can I pay for this thing, right? How do I financially set it up? I don't know if I would have thought like, hey, I need an integration expert.
Sure. I think, as you go through the process, I mean, you think about one of the things I did was knowing what you don't know is actually the biggest part of a lot of things. And we hadn't done this before. And one of the things I liked is an analogy about like paying down the ignorance tax on any given thing, right? So it's like you're going to pay a tax, right? No matter what happens, you have to pay. So the faster you can pay the tax on the ignorance and learn what you don't know, the faster you can move. And during the process and talking to like our attorney, Omid, and who actually introduced us to Steve, was that the hardest part of an acquisition was actually the integration. Most of the time, the failures happen in the integration, not during the purchase. Because it's very similar to a sale, like we have of our product, right? The product, the sale is difficult, don't get me wrong, but then the real work starts of getting people implemented, right? And getting them using it. And once you get them implemented, they tend to be sticky and they stay with you for a long time. I think the same thing is true of an acquisition. It's really hard to get everything done and get the agreements in place and get everything kind of, then the work starts of, how do we bring these companies together to realize all of the optimistic or even pessimistic views that we had during the purchase and make sure those get realized? So I wanted to make sure that we had the best chance of that by talking to somebody who's done it before and knew all of the things that we were going to miss and just things that we didn't even think about. Like it seems intuitive, like we need to bring the people together and to introduce them to each other and we need to do this. But there was things that, like there's checklist items that you just wouldn't even think of that you say, well, if I had to do over again, I would go through and I would make sure to list those. Well, Steve's already done it. So he has a huge amounts of checklists and says, did you think about this? And sometimes it would apply, sometimes it wouldn't, but chances are there's probably at least a bunch of those things you never even thought of. And by having pain, by being able to, you'd be able to buy that experience as opposed to trying to wing it on your own. Hmm.
Yeah, it makes it much easier to have a Sherpa than to not. Yeah, so Steve's a Sherpa of sorts. So Steve, like Scott mentioned that, like when we're going through the when he's going through the process of purchasing, at what point do you start to get involved, right? Like, because you're in it by integration. Integration can't happen until a deal is made, right? So just like if I think about it from a sales perspective of selling our software, well, we can't implement a customer until they buy, right? You do that after. But there's all kinds of things you can do in preparation for that when that happens. So can you talk a little bit about like what does that look like when you met Scott and you talked about the Elmo acquisition and what is involved in your role in that? I know that the role, as soon as it's done, right, it's a bunch of stuff, but tell us a bit about the what does that look like before that?
Okay, let's tackle the first part of your question first. So when should you engage, when should you start planning your integration? The short answer is the earlier the better. And the gold standard integration are maybe Cisco Systems or GE, who have employees who do integration because they acquire so much. And they get the integration team involved in helping get the right price. When you go to a letter of intent, LOI, the deal team's found it. Targets and discussions to say, oh, is it worth 5 or 6 million? And then they'll say to the integration team, hey, what do you think is going to be the problems here? And they'll help say, well, this is going to work well, this is not going to work well, and they help give the deal team a better idea on pricing. But when you're helping external people, the rule of thumb is when due diligence has begun, so you've agreed a price, and then you go through the checking process, make sure everything's okay, that's when you bring the integration team in. And so the reason why is a lot of the most important work, the integration, is perhaps getting ready for the announcement for day one so that you set things off the right way and you get people who've been acquired who are a bit shocked to being acquired perhaps. And they're like, oh, okay, everything's going to be great. I understand what's going on. And that to get them to get that point, it takes a lot of preparation. So a lot of work goes into before you announce, before and you take the risk, it may not work out. But that's when you should do that. The second part is you asked about Elmo, right? Elmo, when I was offered at Elmo, I was really happy. I mean, I've worked in engineering, I work in the tech industry. It was like, yay, this is great. Yeah, here we go. And, but my thought process was like, my initial thought process, you hadn't bought the company yet. Like, so I wanted to understand your product lines. You've A and they've B, how much do they overlap or not? And how much do the businesses overlap? What customers do you have? So getting ready for the future beyond the closing, the signing. But I was wary, you're buying a Canadian company and you're, of course, an American company. If you were to generalize all the Canadian companies in one, and I don't like to generalize really, but you've just, as a rule of thumb, there is wariness of Canadian company by Canadian companies that they get bought and swallowed up and opportunity missed when American companies buy them. So I was wary of an American company buying a Canadian company. I've done, you're my the third or fourth one I've done now. And so that, and then another layer was the language barrier. This is a Quebec-based company. There's a different language. I was wary about that. That's what I was thinking about. And then we can talk about things I expected to find. I thought I'd find old computers, not new ones. The marketing, the web, there's a lot of information in public you can look at to try and get an idea, get little clues. I looked at the different websites, thought they market in different ways, maybe sell different ways. With Canadian companies, you're not allowed to know who the employees are until you've bought the company. So you've got to look for clues without breaking any rules, really. So, yeah. That's how I started off.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I know that when Scott told me, I thought, oh, well, it's going to be a Canadian. There's going to be all these things in, that are different, right? Because they're Canadians and that they're French Canadians. I knew culturally there would be things that were different. So it was good to have you on board to help us navigate that because there would be things we didn't think of. Steve, you always talk about like focusing on the people. What does that look like once the deal goes through? Like, what does that mean, focusing on the people?
So, as I said before, the successful integration is when you finish making one company that is ready to take off. So you need people to do that growth. You probably often want to hire more people I think you guys did actually, either during integration or just after integration, where you know all the roles and what gaps you need to fill. And so how do you make people stick around when they see the news about airline companies and they go, oh my God, we're getting laid off, all the sky is falling, oh, it's terrible. And you got to say, no, it's cool, everything's great. Look, here's the vision. Here's how you fit into the vision. And so we want you to be around. And so if there's a one-word answer to that question and to being successful, it's the word trust, building trust. And you've got to be uncomfortably honest, really. Sorry. You've got to, like, you know, they ask you a tricky question. You've got to, like, tell the truth. And to be honest, though, with you guys, there was very little uncomfortable truth, you know. But, you know, don't shy away from showing you're human. And talk about that. But so, yeah, that's it. So trust, and then you want with trust comes engagement. People are like, okay, I know where we're going. I'm gonna work on this thing. I got a daily job, and I got a few extra tasks to do with integration, like what it might be. If you're in billing, or if you're in development, whatever it might be. And then if you believe in the future, then you're gonna work a little bit extra harder, or balance your time between business as usual and the integration tasks in a good way. So you get productivity is sustained as best you can during the disruption. So getting people on board, you know, you can't make money or can't be successful unless the people are working well. And getting them to understand what you're doing is super important step towards that.
So to that point, Steve, I'll ask Scott this question. Scott, what did you think would be the most difficult or most challenging part about the integration once it began? And was it that?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of hard. I think the cultural differences were probably the thing I was predicting to be the biggest issue. And there are differences. I mean, it really wasn't. But from a core, like, I ended up not being as bad because philosophically, everybody who came over believed in a lot of the same things at a core level. So there was a lot more that was the same than that was different. Right. So the things that were different are like how we handle vacation, because there's laws that are different in Canada about vacation than there is in the United States. And we're still working through things like that. Like, there's different holidays and there's all the kind of machinery of how you do the everyday HR type of stuff. You know, we had to kind of standardize on like how people get compensated. And so all these little things that are necessary to make the machine move, you have to decide on those things because essentially have two versions of everything. And then some things will coincide, some things won't. And then you have to decide which version you want to move forward with. And there was a lot of deciding that had to happen. And then a lot of explaining why you were deciding one way or the other. And then in this case, we were buying a competitor. You know, one of the biggest things I still think is one of the hardest decisions is like, what do we do with two products that have a lot of overlap? And then I think from the very beginning, we thought that there were strengths of the AgniLink product, there were strengths of the CatTalk product. And then over time, that we would be able to create a product together that would be even better. And that's still the goal even to this day. So today, we have this kind of internal mantra that it's one company, two products, and then we're working towards, you know, one company with one product over time. But the product was the hardest part to do. It takes the longest time to evolve. But the thing that we were able to do first was integrate the companies together from an operational standpoint. Like, can we, you know, like, let's not have duplication of effort. Let's not do these things. Like, let's merge everybody together into the right areas. Let's figure out where that is. Let's redistribute the load of the work. Figuring all that out is probably the first work that we had to do. Figuring out the policies, which ones we're going to agree to. And then now everybody's kind of operating and running the business. Then we can decide, like, okay, here's the roadmap to bring these products together over time. Yeah. So I thought the product was going to be the hardest decision. It actually was pretty easy. It was actually all the, like, how do we, you know, who goes where, what are they going to do? How their job is going to change? You know, what do they want to do? Is what they want to do align with what we need them to do? Like, all of those types of decisions had to be made. And so it was a lot of conversations, like Steve said, a lot of being, you know, uncomfortable conversations or authentic conversations about like, well, I know you want to do this, but we really need to do this for a little while until we can move you to this next thing. And, you know, those types of things, because it's a lot of compromises, but at the same time, if people see the vision of where it's going, they're on board for that.
And I must say, often with founder led companies, tech companies. The founder often comes from a coding background. They're R&D first. Mm-hmm. They create a product in their garage, for example, a metaphor. Yeah. And so one of the things I got to do is make sure that they don't drift off, the leaders don't drift off into doing the fun stuff, the R&D development first. So that was, it was refreshing, really refreshing that I said to Scott, hey, you know, if you want to conquer the world, you've got to take a step back on R&D, work out what the market is, and then decide your future. So he's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He already had that under his... So I didn't need to go through the step of, like, sequencing Scott. He had it down in his head, like, R&D is going to be last when we know what the horizon's on the horizon and where what the landscape's going to be getting there. It's really refreshing.
If it's refreshing, that means that's not what you get most of the time.
Yeah. We do find some common problems that come up with integrations. Sometimes you find leaders, the acquirers, you say, a leader say, hey, I've got all this work getting ready to acquire a company, and I give a fantastic welcome speech. Hey, welcome to the company. Great. On the company vision. Here we go. Right, bye. And they're gone. Now, hang on. I need you some more. So that's a thing is like, I need leadership to like... be around sort of 3 months in when morale is down and like all this hard work's going on. You haven't really seen the benefits that come in yet. And so that's a common thing that didn't happen here. Scott was around. Another thing that was refreshing was the budget was right. So a big thing about CAD Talk, everyone out there, is they empower their employees. If they have a good idea and they can justify why they want a certain tool, Scott and Jeff will let you have it. And of course, they've got to use it and get the ROI. But it's refreshing that if you've got a good idea and you can deliver on that, they'll help you get there. It was real. And they hired me. A lot of companies think they can do integrations alone, but they didn't. They knew, they took advice that, hey, it's better value to get external expertise in your first acquisition integration.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in coaching in general. I think that some of the moves that we've been able to make in the last 5-6 years have been around finding people who know and getting coaching and moving faster. And I think that's just another example of that with this. It's like, you know, if you don't know how to do something, you know, like right now I have a coach, like I'm doing these Spartan races. I'm getting a coach to help me with the Spartan races. I get a coach to help me with my diet planning. It's like people, like if you're able to invest in that, And I think the idea is can I bring the future faster to me? And if I could pay money to do that, I'm willing to do that. And then essentially pay down that ignorance debt that I mentioned earlier and be told kind of what am I missing? I'd rather not learn from mistakes what I missed. I'd rather learn from somebody else's mistakes. And that's the beauty of hiring coaching. So I think in this case, we want to get a coach to help us with the integration to tell us all the things that we were going to get wrong before we got them wrong. And that worked out really well. And the thing that's interesting is you don't get to live twice, right? You don't get to try it one way, see how it worked, and then try it another way, and then see and then compare it. You have to make a decision about that. That's like life, right? So when you're thinking about, okay, what's going to increase the likelihood of a successful acquisition? Well, if it integrates together, everybody stays here who came from the other company, and we are able to get the ROI and get the benefits that we were hoping to get out of this purchase. And what's the highest likelihood of that happening is knowing where things go wrong. And I was kind of go back to like how we do implementations. Like a lot of times we have like customers who buy the product and they think they have experience with what they're asking us to do, but they don't have that. They understand what we're asking us to do, but they don't have experience with it. And what they're asking us to do is please give us your experience so we can get there faster. And then sometimes we forget to tell them what our experience is, and then it goes too long. And then, you know, so that consultative type of approach of that, they're not just buying the thing that you're selling, you're also buying the experience so we can move faster.
Yeah, right. That's a common thing is, so small businesses think about the cost of external help instead of the value it brings. So
right.
Yeah.
I mean, common thing, right? I mean, I think it's easy to focus on the cost versus the value, being in sales myself, you're always trying to drive the value. What's the outcome of what you're trying to do? And what is the cost of that if you don't get that outcome? Mm-hmm. Or what's the value of that if you do get that outcome? So it's always important to focus around.
Favorite saying is this, stepping over dollars to pick up nickels, which is like a quite good analogy of like how a lot of things are. It's like you'll do all these things and then you'll leave it to chance to get the outcome that you want. You're literally like, I'm worried about the nickels, so I'm going to step over all the dollars opportunity, right? And then And that happens a lot. If you know, if you think about like doing an acquisition and you're investing all of the money to buy the company, and hopefully, and then you, and you did it on all these projections and everything that you thought about, your projections are on, like, how do you make sure that your projections become true? It all comes in what you do and what actions you take after it, after you own the company. And if you don't take those actions, then it becomes, when those projections don't become true, you don't actually get that, you don't get what you thought you were going to get. And so, like, it's to say, well, I'm going to integrate myself. I'm not going to spend the money to get that help. You're literally stepping over dollars to pick up nickels. I mean, you're just like, oh, I'm going to save money on that. But it's an asymmetrical risk. The risk of it going sideways is way, way higher. And I think people can't see that kind of calculus in their mind of how that works. They're just looking at the dollars and cents. And that's true of a lot of things. People do that a lot. They look at kind of one-dimensional thinking of like, what's the cost of this thing? And is it worth it to me? Without a lot of evidence. And it's like, I mean, think about what we do with ER, like people spend lots and lots of money on ERP, and then the entire ERP runs off a bill of materials, but then they don't want to put the bills of materials in right. So the ERP doesn't run right. So you spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying an ERP.
And millions, maybe.
Millions. And you're not going to spend any money to make sure the data is right so it runs well. That doesn't make any sense. So
that is such a common thing with M&A, is that people spend all this money. Certainly the beginners at M&A, they think, oh, the cost of the company is $10 million, but there's all these extra costs afterwards. And it's not just the cost of integration. And that's part of what we talked to you about, was that sellers around the world, they don't put the investment into a company the year before they sell it. So you're going to find old computers. You're going to find, integrations where the office needed to be redecorated. Or a building didn't have fire safety certification because it is too expensive to get around to it. And so you got a lot of costs, and then they think they must get the building certified. So they cut back on the wrong things. So you must implore people that integration is not integration, and fixing all the things that you got to fix is not cheap. You got to budget that.
Yeah, but it's like it's worth it. Let's use the example of a computer, right? Like I think about, like, I buy a computer. Somebody's on a 5-year-old desktop that's running, and then every day they're dealing with that desktop computer crashing, not running as fast as it could, especially like a developer, right? Their entire job every day is to write code, and they could write 20, 30, 40% less code because they're waiting for the compiler, or they're waiting for this thing. And a computer is what, $2,000 these days? I mean, it's nothing compared to the time, but like that $2,000 shows up on the P&L like that. It's just easy to measure, but the lost opportunity cost to that person is harder to measure. But you're like, oh, it doesn't count because I could see on the P&L that was $2,000, but that lost productivity just goes into the ether. You don't know what it is. The same thing, like, what could the acquisition have given us if we did it right? We don't know. We just know it is what it is today because you can't live twice. But the cost of the expense is very easily measurable. And just having that kind of strategic mind about those types of things, you're like, oh, there's an opportunity here to get a benefit that's probably not, just a little bit harder to measure, but still valid. It's still true.
Yeah, it's much, much easier to make a decision on things you can easily measure, right? You're like, oh, I can measure that. Like we talk about even with what we do. I think, Steve, maybe you probably have it too. It's like, it's easy to do the financial aspects of the, hey, we bought this company. We joined the forces. We maybe kept people. We didn't kept people. We cut people. Now we have financial success. But there's all those soft costs that are valuable and important, but it's hard to measure a soft cost. Same with CAD talk. It's like, I think really any kind of thing like that where you're like, well, you can't live twice. You also can't measure. You can't measure like this. You know, this guy was going to leave the company. He's very valuable in terms of his knowledge, his skill. He was going to leave the company because he was whatever, but now he's going to stay. But you don't know that, right? Or you can't measure that. What's that impact? And so it's just Scott's point. It's like much, much easier to see the whatever the hard expense is, right? You spent this money on a computer, or you spent this much on software. That's very easy to measure. Whereas like the soft costs or the missed opportunity is really impossible. So people go, it's not really anything.
You know, you mentioned spreadsheets and people looking at spreadsheets to get value out of M&A. And really, thankfully, people are moving away from that now. Thank you. People are, you talked about culture straight away, and it's finally getting a recognition that this is one of the important areas that you should focus upon besides finances. But also, we're seeing that companies are realizing success comes from from the integration, from the business operations, and not the financial engineering that we used to have. In fact, I was reading a paper from PwC this morning about how little influence financial engineering has now on M&As, mostly about business and hence the people. So although it's although operations is really the right direction, there's the bit we're talking about now, which is integration, which comes before operations. Like, hey, stick around. It's going to be great. Here's where you are in the future, our future, and become a part of it. And then once you've got everybody integrated, then you can improve the business operations afterwards. So a trend we're seeing is that people are recognizing that improving the business is important, but also there's still a gap for integration between the closing and before operations really kicks in as well. So, yeah. We're also seeing a lot of companies unable to find the perfect company to buy. That's so they're having to, they're going to have to buy pretty good, not perfect companies. And that, again, needs you to be better at integration and operations afterwards. That's a good trend there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point, Steve. I think that, like, in our case, we were buying, you know, kind of a competitor that we hadn't run into a lot in the market. We were competing, but in different spaces. Hand and glove fit pretty well that way. But I think if you think about a risk scenario, would be that most people, when you want to buy a company, typically a lot of, like, you think about PE firms, they want to buy companies at a certain size. Because once companies hit a certain size of revenue or a certain size of people, the risk ratios work out better around if things go wrong, because you can absorb a certain amount of those things. So a lot of ways, you know, even at our size, people don't always want to buy because it's like the risk, you know, like the risk is higher because, like, smaller companies harder to buy. And then there's, like, you think about it, you buy a small company, there's a handful of people and one of them leave. That's a big change. That's a big thing. Right. And so that's the risk. In our case, it was, you know, we were buying a smaller company and it carried a little bit more risk. We weren't doing a financial buy like a PE firm would do, we were able to do a strategic buy of saying, okay, this works really well with our business and we think we can make this work. We were able to look at the number and look at everything more objectively and say, okay, yeah, there's a strategic thing here that we can make work. Whereas like a PE firm, when it came in, probably discounted or it's not even been interested because it would have been difficult to make all the numbers work on its own.
So Steve, do acquisitions, like, is there a trend in terms of, like, highs and lows? Do you see any sales, whatever you're selling, you have certain times a year are better than others, right? There's a reason why retailers like Black Friday and Christmas time, right? There's a reason. So is there like a buying season or an acquisition season, or do there ebbs and flows? How does that work?
We find smaller businesses try and the seller's tack position is a consideration in smaller businesses. So the seller will say, hey, I want you to close a business in this tax year, not this one, because of whatever reasons their accountant says. So we do find that smaller ones have got an eye on the calendar much more. As you get bigger, there isn't really a season with the big, well, if you try and take over an industry, it's a large industry, like I was in building materials industry in one integration, and it was one competitor buying another competitor. You had to wait for federal approval and got the approval and then off you go. So, you know, there's a lot of start, stop, especially, I think you found that too, actually, with small businesses. But there isn't really a schedule for the bigger the company gets. No, not time of the year, no.
Okay. So I guess, Scott, now that you've done one, like, what's your feedback? You're like, yeah, let me go sign up for another one? Or is there like, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, how would you evaluate that experience other than there was learning, right? Steve was important and part of that and was a good guide and learning. You know, what would your kind of feedback be?
I think it's one of the best learning experiences we ever had. I think that not just from just learning how to do acquisitions, but learning about business, you know, in general. I think that one of the things you learn, you deal with a seller who's, you know, and you understand their psychology and then you understand your psychology and the things that you worry about. And then you exposes a lot of things to you that you, like, how do you describe this better? It's like, the buying process will expose all your little weaknesses, like, and all the things that you worry about, and all, like, it really exposes all that. It really brings it to the surface because you have to work through them, and you have to figure out what's important to you and what's not important to you. And I also think that I would do it again, but I think the thing that I would do is I wouldn't try to do a bunch of them at the same time or do them back to back to back. That would be, I think there's a lot of care that goes into it and to the integration part of it and getting stabilized again. Because I think you could really hurt yourself by trying to go back to back to back and just have the destabilization of it could cause you to almost implode. Like, I can see where companies have that problem. They get acquisition hungry and they just go buy, 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 buy. And then they never stabilize, and then it just kind of just deteriorates. Whereas you want to have a kind of a stage of like, we know who we are again. We did this kind of, it's almost like you broke a bone and you want it to heal again. And then you can go out and you can start doing, you know, OCR races or whatever it is that you do again. And then you're like, okay, you know, I'm back to doing what I was doing. But yeah, I think that's the only, I think it's a lot more work than you ever would have thought. Like, just like anything, to do something right is so much more work to do it properly than you actually think. But it's worth it. But I wouldn't do it like on a whim, especially the imagination.
Oh God, no. Yeah. But you know, the smaller the company, or smaller the acquired business, certainly the more gentle you got to be with changes. Mm-hmm. You know, so except for the good stuff, you know, if you say, hey, we're going to decorate your office, or hey, we're going to improve your travel expenses, and hey, bring it quickly. But really, like you say, I like that metaphor of, you know, a healing. Kind of work out who we are now that we are now a North American company, not an American company. And in fact, you know, so who are we? And then we can, you know, plan our next thing carefully. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did actually appreciate that CAD talk went through lessons learned. So at the end of the integration, they said they had a session where we went back and looked and what went right, what went wrong, and how can we improve things, and let's archive all this important information for the next time if we do it again or you do it again. And that was refreshing too, that CAD talk did the whole integration life cycle, including the lessons learned near the end. Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it goes back to our value, which is like, which is essentially continuous improvement value, which is what we call relentless reinvention, is that we just want to know how to do it better. We want to figure out a better way to do it every time and learn from that. So we're not learning the same lesson over and over again. You know, really trying to, like I said, paying down the ignorance tax and figuring out like how to, and then document that. Because I think one of the things that people forget is they forget why they make decisions. And then they end up making the decision again, right? So it's like, and then, or they stick with the decision because they don't remember why they made it. And is the criteria the same as it was when I made it the first time? So when you say, you know, we decided to do this time because these factors were true. And then you could revisit that and go, are those factors still true? If they're not, then you might revisit the decision. If they are, then the decision's sound. Keep going forward. And so like being able to document what went well, what went wrong, and then like why we made a decision we did, and like why we went in this direction is actually quite useful. It keeps you from going from like just turning back and forth and doing a bunch of different things because you don't remember why you decided to do it that way the first time, you know, things like that. So yeah, I think absolutely that's part of the culture of the company to do that.
Well, see, this has been a good conversation. Before we kind of end, what's next for you and your company, right? What's next? So you have something big on your horizon, your own acquisition. What do you have going on?
Well, you know, you shouldn't ask anyone if they're acquiring. They can't answer the question.
Of course.
Yeah.
But so we have two revenue streams, which actually also fit together as well. So we did consulting advisory work for you guys. We also had this, we train and mentor our clients, employees, so that they can do integrations themselves. And so we have the designation, the Certified Acquisition Integration Managers, the AIM or CAIM program. Mm. And we train our clients' employees how to become certified integration managers. But it's not just the training and say, good luck, we're going now, because there's still a learning curve to go through. So we find that the certification, training certification, and also sitting through integrations with them. So in a way, what we do, we CAD talk, but we have someone from the company shadowing us. We get them up to speed. We'll do a couple with us leading, and then we'll have them lead and we'll support them. So we're growing competencies. Now, people say, hey, aren't you just making competitors for yourself? Well, there's so much need for us. I estimate there's probably 1,000 companies a year that need help with integration. I mean, So there are 40,000 acquisition decisions per year in the USA alone. Many of them are too small and don't need help. Many are too big and you can get Deloitte. But then there's some know what they're doing and a lot need help. So to answer your question, networking, getting out there, showing people what we do, getting people successful. So they'll say, hey, I know a guy with a funny accent. This guy called Steve. You should talk to him. And he'll get you up to speed. That and partnerships. We're a partner with the Alliance of M&A Advisors, the AMAA, and we've got other discussions in other countries going on too. Confidential, of course. So that's where we are. We're growing the brand and growing awareness. It's good.
Excellent.
Well, Steve, where can they, if people are listening to this and they're interested in an acquisition or learning more, where would they find you?
So our company is called Intista. That's taking the words integration, INT, and fashionista, Intista. So it's INTISTA.com. And so we're there, and we got people around the world who can help you out.
That's great, Steve. I know it's been a huge help for us finishing that acquisition and the integration. So a huge shout out to you, Steve, for guiding us along the way. So Scott, before we let Steve go and sign off, any last words of wisdom or thoughts about the process and the integration?
I think it's you want to get a coach to help you through the process if you haven't done something before. And I think getting, as I mentioned earlier, just paying down that ignorance tax and learning about from people who've done it before, it's well worth it. I mean, this integration went a lot smoother than it would have otherwise if we had tried to just wing on our own.
No, that's good advice. I agree. Like having been a former teacher, it's always good to talk to somebody who knows. Who can help you along the way. So Steve, Scott, this has been a great conversation. I enjoyed it again. So to our listeners, you can find Steve at his website, intista.com. Of course, you can find Cad Talk at cadtalk.com. Please subscribe and share this podcast with others. Anyone in the acquisition space or considering an acquisition, look Steve up. Feel free to contact us if you want to kind of introduce you personally to Steve. We can be of help. Steve would certainly do that. So, if you've got value from this, leave a comment, leave a comment, subscribe to the podcast. And Steve, it was good having a conversation this time. And for everyone out there listening, we'll see you next time on the Integrate Intelligently podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CanTalk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on Cad Talk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by Cad Talk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cadtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.